All subsequent meetings of the Safety and Security Committee is to make our schools even safer. Now, don't get me wrong, the real reason we're here, the reason we're sitting here is because about a year ago, the Texas state government passed Senate Bill 11 that said that every school district has to form a Safety and Security Committee that's going to review, make sure that the schools have emergency plans for what to do in case of in case there's an issue. The school has to make sure that it has security officers, that it has relationships with police departments, that it's addressing all of the things that it feels needs to happen to make the school safe. Now, we are ahead of the game. We do many of those things already. We already have emergency plans. We already have relationships with police officers. And when I was at Garland High School as assistant principal, I called Officer Capers at least once a week because that's the type of how far ahead of the game we are at Isle, Texas. You know, we go above and beyond. Now, although a lot of what we're going to do is review exactly what Senate Bill 11 has us do, we're going to look to make it to see what we have to do to make our schools even safer. Tonight we're going to look at our emergency operation plans that have already been in place since the beginning of the school. But we're going to do Q&A and we're going to evaluate and we're going to see what needs to be better. We're going to talk a little bit about our threat assessment and how it can be even better than it already is. So before we dive into the meat of it, I think we'll go around the room and kind of introduce ourselves, talk about the role that we're here as, and just a little short biography. I'm going to start myself. After college, I spent 8 years in the finest organization in the world, the United States Army, as an aviation officer. After getting out, I went into manufacturing and then spent 2 years working with Isle, Texas as assistant principal down at Garland High School before my current role as chief of staff. The reason I came to Isle, Texas is because of its mission, because it's not just another school. I would never still work at the kind of public school that I went to. I like working for a school that has an ambitious leader, that has an ambitious mission, and is always pushing forward above and beyond, not just accepting it for what it is. So, Ms. Lane?
Valerie Lane. I'm the principal of Keller Saginaw High School. I am in my 20th year of education. I joined Isle, Texas 4 years ago. I opened the Grand Prairie K-8 campus. And this is my first year at Keller Saginaw High School.
My name's Travis Laycox. I'm a law enforcement officer or police officer in College Station. Been doing that for 15 years. And then my wife and I also own a company, TNT Security Solutions. And how that comes into play with you guys, we actually provide y'all's officers for Saginaw, Lancaster, and College Station. But we go all over the U.S. and contract local law enforcement to work jobs to make it easier on places that need them and keep the schedules full. So it also doesn't over-impact a local jurisdiction that maybe not has enough officers to pull them in.
So. Excellent.
I'm Mary Albritton, and I work with the counselors across the district, and I joined IL Texas in January 2017 as a counselor at Keller Saginaw High School. So, and then I moved on to coordinator and then now director. So my experience before IL Texas was from Arkansas and Missouri, SPED teacher and counselor.
And you lead what? 39, 45 counselors throughout the district?
50, including 50. Our two crisis counselors. So,
yeah. As a point of reference, charters don't even have to have counselors by law. So, thank you.
Yes, and I'm thankful we have them. I can't imagine,
I can't either.
Not having our counselors. Yeah. Yes, but thank you.
John Capers, of 20 years with Garland PD. And work closely with ILT, the lower campus and the high school, both nearby there in on Shiloh and Garland, for about the last 5 years. And I usually end up being the liaison between the school and the city of Garland, parks, the traffic department, and other issues. So kind of adopted them as the SRO, sort of, the school resource officer, sort of.
Thank you.
Yes, very much. Very much.
I'm Robert Shelton, and I am a consultant with the district, an emergency preparedness consultant, former teacher, coach, assistant principal in Garland and in Dallas ISD, 23 years in Garland, and then I moved to Dallas as I was in Dallas with the coordinator working in the under Mike Moses, I guess at the time, Dr. Enos, I guess, we created emergency preparedness or emergency operations department after we realized that all of the fire drills, all the things that schools were doing, there was no accountability, there was no serious plans, there was nothing in place. And we looked at it, and with our experience, I represented the school district part of it, working with the police department part of it, and we created an emergency operation plan for the campuses. And it, you know, it evolved over time, trying to find out what worked, what didn't work, and how to get everybody the same message. So we had 235 campuses in Dallas and 50 other facilities that we had to make sure that had some kind of responsibility. So that's where I kind of came into being. I met Mr. Conger, and we were, you know, we did some training before, and he asked me to come back when ILT started, and we kind of started putting plans together, and that's where I am now.
Angela Marcellus, Executive Director, Office of Professional Responsibility. One of the areas I work with is nursing, and that's what I'm representing here today. This is my 27th year in education, and I opened up our Garland K-8 building in 2013.
Before you go,
I'm Sheldon Ross. I've been with ILT since August 1st of 2014. I'm the Dallas area supervisor for our All-Star Security Group. One of the new ideals that I've had to bring to ILT is our K-9 program that I'm proud to bring out to you guys. With our K-9 program, we're able to detect explosives, drugs, and weapons. I think that that definitely be something that will be utilized throughout the school system if there's ever a threat on one of our campuses. We can also help the local law enforcement agencies that are responsible for the schools within the district.
Ben Simpson, Legal Services Coordinator. I'm taking the minutes here and making sure the wheels stay on.
Thomas Seabury, Deputy Superintendent of School Leadership. I was in the United States Marine Corps before I got into education, so I'm kind of struggling with that statement that Aaron made earlier. But I've been in education for 16 years, administrator for 8, and I've been with IL Texas for 4, and I'm a zealot for this mission. So.
I'm Eddie Conger, a former Marine Infantry Officer, and I'm just so very thankful to be here at IL Texas, that there have been enough crazy people along the way that have fell in love with the mission and come alongside of us to be able to serve nearly 20,000 kids in what we do. And thank you all very much for your willingness to serve on this committee.
Peter Goodmanson, I'm a board member. I too was a Marine artillery officer 1,000 years ago, and now I run a company called the Pet Loss Center. We do pet cremations around the country. Sir?
Well, you know, there's a joke in there, but I'm...
there are so many. It overwhelms the system.
Anyway, Jim Williams, I'm the board president. My job is to keep Mr. Conger in line.
He does a good job of...
sign all those big checks that make sure you guys get paid. So.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Jeff Bass. I'm a parent. My son started the first day. This is 2013. He started in kindergarten, so he's in sixth grade now. Like I said, I'm here as a parent.
And he survived driveline for those first 6 weeks of that first year.
A couple years in a row, the first
I almost.
Weeks,
yeah.
Yeah. So, and as a coincidence, I own the Dickies that cater to. So, we all need a little team.
Yeah.
We have a plate.
Frank Crable, Executive Director of Facilities and Maintenance. I've been with IL Texas for 5 years. I went to college and got my bachelor's degree in criminal justice, so my passion starting out was being a police officer. My career took me a different path, but one of my many duties as assigned is safety and security for the district.
John Howe, Director of Safety and Security. I've been here since January 15th. I've got a bachelor of arts degree in American History from Rutgers back in New Jersey. An MPA from Golden Gate University in California. I started out LAPD in 1973, working in South LA. Since then, I've been a police chief in California and two cities in Colorado.
And we're very happy.
Chief, you didn't tell him that you've been a police officer almost all your life.
Pretty much, sir. Because I'm old.
Well, that makes two of us.
Three of us.
Very good. So thank you very much. And I should also mention that I am a parent. I've got three students at IELTS Access. It's a big part of the reason why I came.
And Aaron is serving as the chairman of this committee to also keep us on track. So.
Very good. I'm going to set a stopwatch so we're out of here on time. But I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to John so that he can take us through. We're going to go through our some of the technical things that we need to address as far as Senate Bill 11, but we're going to spend particular time with our emergency operation plans.
Vanna will help me out here. As the people, Mr. Dorsey said, SB 11 mandated the creation of a school safety and security committee, and it included, at this point, on SB 11 charter schools. That's why we're here. Next. And what the committee requires by SB 11 is representatives from OEM, from local PD, the president of the board of directors, another board director member, district superintendent, any other designees that the superintendent wants to put in the program, including a classroom teacher, and then two parents. Now, what the committee is supposed to do, and it's their focus and their goal, is to develop and implement emergency plans and to mesh those plans with the, I call the EOP, Emergency Operations Plan. The committee is mandated to provide recommendations to the board of directors regarding that EOP, whether it be positive, negative, suggestions, additions, deletions. And they're required to provide the district with information regarding our security audit. We are required by 2022 to complete a security audit of every building in our district, which we're working on right now. We're trying to get that set up right now. I think we're ahead of the game on that one right now.
And as far as the audit, is that something that they have special requirements of who is authorized to conduct the audits?
There's no special requirements. So we could do it internally or we can do it externally.
And for the first 6 years, we've had Robert as an outside consultant come in and do some of that audit and help in the creation.
But I've just created the emergency operation plans.
What Texas Safe Schools has done is provided basic matrix of what they want to see in the audit. It's pretty extensive. It's very extensive.
Yeah.
I would say time intensive to fill that audit out. It can be done. It requires every building in the district to be audited.
Sure.
And then the committee has to review each report that's required to be submitted to Texas Safe Schools to make certain that the report is accurate and complete. And then the last thing they do is they consult local law enforcement to see if any kind of, to add any additional law enforcement presence on a campus or in the vicinity of a campus.
And one of the things that's unique about the law, it's tasking about 1,200 local education agencies to do this, but over 1,100 of them are ISDs, which are in generally one city or maybe two cities. What makes us very different as a charter, we have schools in many different cities, and so that's why we kind of reached out to folks, police, in several of those different cities.
And the committee is, once again, responsible for making certain that the campus drills are being done on a timely manner and in a regular manner. Our requirement kind of is one per semester for a lockdown-type drill and then a fire drill every month. That's what our requirements are right now. That could be expanded, probably should be, because it's repetitive, it's muscle memory. If you do it often enough, it'll react quickly as opposed to having to think through your response. You're required to meet once each semester, so we'll take care of the spring semester. Well, it wouldn't.
We're also trying to meet in May,
and then once over the summer. And we're required to comply with the Open Records, Open Meeting Act. And we have to post our meeting notices within 72 hours in advance of the meetings. That's it for the...
You want to go into the MEOP?
What do you want to do? EOPs?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, please. This large binder here contains all the EOPs for every campus. Mr. Shelton wrote that up, was it a couple years ago?
Well, it's been continuing. It's been living document.
The book started out this big. Yeah. It's been growing up. Yeah.
And what this, it's divided up by campus.
Yeah. What we have here is an example of one
campus. Well, yeah. So we picked, divided up by campus, and it's campus, I'll say it's, what it's requiring the administrators of the campus to do is take this plan and fill in the blanks. Mr. Shelton's plan laid out what should be done, but required the campus administrator to go into that plan and flesh it out with names and specifics. I will tell you honestly, that has not been done universally. There's some campuses are good, some campuses aren't that good. And that's a problem that we have to confront and deal with at some point, I think, in the near future. But the plan, it breaks down all the, well, I'd say all the potential problems that might occur on a campus, from active shooter, fire drills, hazmat, what else we have there?
Severe weather.
Severe weather.
I think this is the Ukrainians responsible for this.
Oh, there it goes. I don't know what I did, but it works. So, let's not touch it. But anyway, so, examples.
So, what you see there is what should be done. The name should be fleshed into their program by this campus administrator. This campus is pretty good about doing it. Other things may change. So as the names change, so should the plan evolve to incorporate those new changes, new names. It lays out what each name has responsibility for. It's slightly outdated, but it's not bad. It also talks about referring to what we call the ICS Incident Command System. We should adopt that in any kind of emergency situation that might occur on the campus. These names would occupy the positions in the ICS system.
This is at the campus level. We also have a district
level too. And what Mr. Shelton did in his initial plan was to identify the most likely campus hazards per campus. What you see there is what was identified for Arlington KA.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
So this is available to us on paper. Is there any way to get this electronic so that anytime something happens? Oh, so
it is under the FM and principles Google Drive that I shared with you guys at the beginning of the year.
Okay. Yep. The million things.
Yeah,
in Google
Drive. I understand.
What's the best way to get it to you?
If you just let me know that it's there. I didn't, because I don't go through and, check.
100%.
Facilities,
documents. To be honest with you, briefly talking with the schools when we did this and so on, most of the schools were new. They don't even know really what their problems were. And now, that's how you build a plan, is come together with your committee. What is most likely to happen on this campus? Are we in an industrial area where there's a chance of an explosion? Are we in a flood-prone area? Are we in an area where fire or intruder or something might be most prominent? So, what's most important? And let's talk about it. How do we build our plan for that? How do we build our plan for the next thing? So it's...
And I will say this much, to have the plan in written form is great, but you got to practice it.
Absolutely.
You really have to. If you don't practice it, it's not going to come back normally. And that requires the practice across the board. Teachers, I would include custodians, anybody on the campus should be involved in the training. And I would do it at very least at the beginning of each school year, and then I would reinforce it over the school year. And I can help you out. One of my plans is to create a practical scenario. Mm-hmm. I'll put on a Redman outfit. Redman outfit is, it's like a Pillsbury Doughboy outfit. And I'll go to a campus or a general meeting, and I will tell people what they should do on an active shooter. And then we'll set up a scenario in a classroom with volunteer teachers who will go through the process. I will breach the door, and they'll respond the way they should for an active shooter, which means basically beating me up.
No, okay, that would be fun.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm just thankful she didn't ask for me to be put in that seat.
I've done it, and I've got some good response from teachers. They like the training. It's a hands-on thing. They really figured out that they know what they can really do. Going to a lecture is great, but they want to see hands-on what they can really do. Okay. When it comes down to it. That's the plan. And then we would probably videotape it so it would be available for other campuses to look at and see.
Okay.
And be volunteer teachers. I don't want to make anybody, if they want to do it, be volunteers.
Chief, why don't we make these plans available on the website? So if we're going to have a separate safety committee, you know, it should be available to all the safety meetings. I know you got issues with maybe phone numbers and all that. Maybe you sanitize something.
No, what I would say is we don't want to get out too far out beyond the camp, this group here.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So you do the committee because, you know, it makes no sense for the committee not to be able to give them input.
Sure.
I mean, that's the whole point of the committee. So, and, you know, if the principal doesn't know what she's supposed to do and, you know, if it's hidden in a Google Drive somewhere, you know, the question is, you know, how are we communicating, you know, all of this? Because, I mean, you're one guy, and then as we expand campuses and build more campuses, you know, there's a dilution factor.
That's a valid point. I think we could create some kind of group that of the committee here. We could shoot it out, just plan out, or a exemplar out, so you can see how the plan is designed, and then offer suggestions, and probe any suggestions anybody wants to give us. There's no ego involved in this plan. It's supposed to be a living document, supposed to evolve and change with suggestions. So feel free to say, change this, or this is great, this is terrible. That's fine.
Yes. Yeah. And we need to make sure that the campuses are involved. And I can speak from my experience. When I was at the Garland High School, and Frank came at the beginning of the year and sat down with me and the rest of the administrative team, and we went through all of our emergency plans, all of them. We reviewed them with Mr.
Yeah, we do that at the beginning of every year.
At the beginning of the year, once the plans are complete and they're distributed, you and I have been doing it, or whoever, I've visited every school every single year and sat down with whatever administrative team that's available to us when we're there, and we go through the plan and answer questions and ask. Some of it's repetitive, but, you know, one of the big problems that you see is, like, when you start getting a school and you start learning that school and their tendencies and what's going on, and you start getting it, it seems like next year we've got different administration, you've got new people coming up, you've got people moving, and it's kind of start over again. So it's, the plan needs to be consistent, and but it's hard when, you know, it's just the school business. You have a lot of change, so each year, you know, they need to have the opportunity to study and understand what goes on that campus.
And my plan is to pack a bag and go out and hit each campus and sit down with the administrator and go over the plan line by line and actually work with them to fill in the blanks. So make sure it is done and do it every year. As long as I'm here, do it every year. And make sure it's current. It's been current. So the plan goes through a lot of things. It goes through evacuation sites. This campus is pretty good about identifying evacuation sites.
Can I say something? One,
sure.
When I go out, this, I've usually come across the hiccups that come up. Evacuation from ILT campuses, it's difficult because they're, I mean, the ones that are closer together, that's good. You have a package there. But when in doubt, there's not always a place that's a really good place for these schools to go. The one place that we do know is another ILT campus is a place that we can go. It might not be that we're going to be there in 10 minutes. It might take us half a day or whatever to move people, but we know the rules. We are accepted. We know the layout. You know, so I try to have one ILT campus listed on every evacuation site as the place that another Isle Texas school would go to. And the Houston area, it's kind of tough. You know, they're not clustered as well. But if we have Rush Creek Church, that's great. We go there, and hopefully we're a good neighbor to them and we can be in there. If not, just making sure that we have at least another Isle campus that we can go to.
And evacuation sites are driven by the situation.
Yeah.
If you have a hazmat incident, it may require you to be a mile away, as opposed to just being a block away.
Right.
So that's driven by what the hazmat experts, the fire guys, will tell you. They're the experts. They'll say, hey, you guys got to move farther out because of wind conditions, because of heat, whatever. Move your evacuation site beyond what you have already predetermined to another site. And we should also establish a really good relationship with that evacuation site, whoever runs that site. Not requires an MOU or not, just somebody that we can talk to establish a connection. So if we have to evacuate, we can call that person and say, hey, can we use your site right now? And then we go with that site.
One of the hiccups, though, that we've always run into, especially with churches and everywhere else, is that they realize that once those people come onto our facility and something happens, they have to assume responsibility for that. And they're starting to give us the Heisman a little bit about, hey, we're not quite as welcoming as we thought we would be bringing you over here. Now, I think in a serious crisis, anybody would be willing to help a school of kids and so on. But, you know, unless you have the keys to that place and you're able to get in there at any time and you have, you know, it's not really a great option. You know, so you've got to have a good neighbor that will accept you. Other, if you don't have a school, it's just hard to always find a good location to evacuate to, and that's and what's most likely to happen in a campus is, I think, evacuation. You know, that's probably the most prominent thing overall, is having to have a problem in the campus where kids have to leave the campus.
And maybe require more use.
Well, I was going to say that's a good point, because we talked about the Harvey situation in Houston. So when you get really severe weather, for example, and you got to, and you're cut off from families, neighborhoods, all of that, you know, the other thing here is to make sure that all the other agencies that you need to talk to, the FEMA guys and so forth, are all connected, because, you know, the city may make decisions like they did in Houston, which could affect maybe your plan. So that's another thing. And so communications overall is going to be a big challenge.
Yeah, when I wrote the Y2K plan at the town of Breckenridge in Colorado, we reached out to every city department, every town department, and our vendors too. Like, if we needed heavy equipment, we had a line, a link with heavy equipment people when you're here. But so you have to reach out to your a broad spectrum of people they may need to call upon, and have those links established in advance.
And I think you need to check in regularly too, just because we get change, we get new principals, they get new managers, new pastors, and stuff like that.
I would suggest that any plan be reviewed at least once a year.
Absolutely. Before the kids get there.
Yeah. That's why whenever I write policy procedures, I put in an issue date and a review date, which prompts me to make a review. Some of the dates you may see on what I've written are just place setters right now, because nothing hasn't been approved. But I always put an issue date and review date in to generate that review. Yeah, these are all just fleshing out more of the ELP under the ICS concept. There's a teacher list with buddy teachers, which is part of the ELP. This plan addresses who has special skills, who's good at whatever the case may be. Special needs, if we have special needs students, that's in the plan too, is how we deal with those.
We're required by law to deal with that.
I have a question about the list of people with special skills. Would that include someone who's licensed to carry? And if so, okay, so that's...
No, we're talking about first aid.
They're not able to bring it on campus.
Can't, right, so I'm just curious about that.
No, prior military service, so somebody who has triage.
Yeah. We all have triage.
different
me. No, it's not.
Okay. And I will tell you that this plan would merge into a district level plan, because at some point it becomes so big that you have to have Mr. Conger to be involved in a district level plan to kind of umbrella over the local campus plan, which would require liaison between district level and in the local campus level too.
Well, this also gets down to what kind of command center you're going to have up here for these types of things, because one thing maybe you're going to cover this, Chief, but so, like, you know, when I see staging, you know, it's also about moving people. So what's the transportation plan that fits up behind that? Is it going to be commercial? Is it something already within the capabilities of the schools to move people, or do you expect the parents to come? And then you got to manage parents, because, you know, they're all going to come in and they're going to be hitting the principal and everybody else. And, you know, you're going to have this choke point of communication. And so they're going to want information. So the other question in that communication plan, how do they get communicated to on a broadcast type scenario?
And that's the area where we will be working on to have a combat, a CLC here at the HQ that has all the elements of a major COC. We don't have transportation assets really available to get enough vehicles out of campus.
We have 26 buses.
Spread out through the state.
Yeah. We actually had to evacuate a campus this year, Lancaster High School, but luckly that's 72.
It's 72 kids.
Right.
The point being, the Arlington one, Rush Creek is a mile and a half away from, the church is a mile and a half away from where the campus is, and the plan was to walk down there.
Same thing with Garland Cave and Garland High School. They can walk.
And then all of the plans, it becomes a cluster, an organized cluster of how you do drive line there to be able to marry up the parents with the kids and the panic that's going to instill in the parents to begin with that their kid has been evacuated. But you're absolutely right, sir. And it's one of the many reasons I'm very happy that we found John, and John is here to help us as we develop that.
But to General's point, what's critical is where you put your individual areas. You don't want to have your media right next to your parents. That's a bad thing to have.
Oh, absolutely.
That's really bad. You want to put your, and within reason, you want to have a media site within a real distance of the incident, but not too close, and definitely not your parents.
Yeah.
That's bad news. And you want to have your communication site at a certain location, too, so it all kind of moves together. But it's a matter of finding the sites, too, that are reasonable distance from your incident. That's the issue. Transportation is a big issue.
Yeah.
Moving those kids.
Well, and then the other thing is, you know, who is communicating with the media, right? So, you know, how are they trained to respond? You know, are they given a district message? Are they given a local message? Is it an integrated message? Because, you know, once you're disjointed, then they lost confidence in you, right?
And the plan that I'm working on right now, the PIO would be Caitlin.
Yep.
But everything goes through Caitlin. Nobody talks to the media other than Caitlin. Now, Ms. Conger can tell her what to say, but any questions from the media go to Caitlin to answer. So there's one point of contact and one message going out. Not talking to me, not talking to anybody else on the campus. All referrals go to Caitlin at that command post to make the unified message. Otherwise, as you said, you have all different kinds of messages going out. That's not good.
Caitlin is our executive director of communications up at your headquarters.
We talked about that. I mean, it's funny going to each school, those questions that came up, and you know, really, how do you handle the media when they show up? I mean, what goes on? But we also really need to think about, as an administrator level on the campus, what's going out from the phones that are being answered? Do you make sure that you give the message to the people that are answering your phones? Here's what we want said, nothing more, nothing less. We don't need a pin. You don't want fires getting started. You know, we want to control it from the word go. And having scripts already made, certain things that are to say, not to say, are really critical in trying to keep something from blowing up. Because those parents will come.
Yeah. One of the things we have lots of rooms to improve, so please don't take anything I'm saying as we've got it all figured out, because we don't. But I'm very excited that Caitlin is on board. That's her degree. Part of her experience was as a TV reporter. And part of her development is to help develop the principals and the skill sets so that they have a better poise to be able to deal with the media. One quick story. If it wasn't for the public affairs training I got at AWS and Command and Staff College, I would not have been prepared to be the principal of TJ in Dallas, where we had a kid overdose on cheese heroin and die, and there's three television trucks out in front of TJ, and the guy from PAO didn't come down there. It was me, knucklehead principal, walking out there and talking with them. And I felt comfortable doing that, but it was because I had that PR training, which is what I'm expecting Caitlin to be able to do to help kind of develop that at the
principal level. Well, but you know what's going to happen. I mean, this happens with all the media folks, and maybe creating like a media symposium for the at different levels, not just at the upper levels, because every reporter is going to go find that parent.
Like they always do.
That's walking around the street. They're going, well, what did you think?
Yeah.
And then the question is, what is their response? So even maybe like in an assembly with the kids is, let's talk media, you know, reaction. What do you do as a kid? Some media comes up, a person comes up, what is your action as a student? You know, so if you need to go to John or you or the principal or whoever, then they ought to have a path to say, okay, in my head, I know what I need to do. And then, and that, you know, they're not qualified to necessarily make that answer, because whatever answer they give is going to be an emotional answer. And it's not going to be the one that you want. And then, you know, then we're fighting the fire, right?
Right.
Okay, well, now we got to put this fire out because now, you know, they said something that maybe it's not true, but that you're going to run down that path. So, but just something to think about, you know.
So, Caitlin, and she's wonderful. She's probably here. She's a workaholic. But she has that training put together for the principals, ready to go. I've reviewed it with her. She's ready to give it at the April principals meeting. I've talked to her about giving that kind of campus-level training at the different campuses over the summer. And then I even talked to her the other day about some kind of lesson plan within the leadership class for the students to get some media training.
One thing from a chief's perspective is you never want to have a response of no comment.
Exactly.
Because media will fill in the blanks.
Exactly.
You have to have a message. Would it just be, I'll get back to you?
Yeah.
But you can never say no comment. It's like guaranteed.
And that will be the only thing that they show, is the leader saying, no comment, okay, no comment.
And they'll fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
Well, now I'll give you an example, just because the coronavirus is ever-present in everybody's mind. So one of my other board responsibilities is for the county in the public health advisory. So Dr. Wong and I, who you've seen a lot on TV or on radio recently, had lots of talks about how we talk about this, because, you know, you got now people going, well, I'm not going to the Chinese restaurant because I'm going to get coronavirus, right? And, I mean, it's just all of this sort of weirdness, but it's mob behavior in a different way. And so you got to go in and you got to, you know, dispel the rumor, and you got to talk about the truth. What do you do? How do you behave? You know, I mean, we had the other ISD superintendents talk the other day what they're going to do. They all got called down to downtown Dallas to talk about their response, right? So they haven't called the ISD, I mean, the charters. But at the end of the day, everybody that has a school student wants to know. So if coronavirus shows up here, which kind of becomes a safety issue, right, what are we going to do? And then what is your answer? How do we handle it? And so you stick to really what the common things are. This is what the CDC recommends, or NIH. You know, here's what our public health guys are talking about. This is what you do. If you need to isolate, quarantine, then we'll do that in an appropriate manner. And it would be the same thing, you know, like you talk about Houston. Now, I'm not sure how many of our campuses are near some of the petrol pipelines, so that's something you have to think about, because I've been in Houston when two serious incidents happened. A plant blew up, and a major chemical spill went out, and had to evacuate a school, a neighborhood, half the city, all of that, and those things are very toxic. Mm-hmm. And so by the time the hazmat guys get there, you know, in some cases they were overwhelmed because it's so big. And so those are kind of things you got to think about. So passive evacuation, getting away from that stuff. And, you know, when you don't, the things you don't think about, like, well, down in Dickinson, Texas, is the National NOAA Weather Service. So they can tell you the prevailing winds that are going on and where you need to get away from. So, you know, just things like that. And that's a command center type of response. But, you know, and then just the design of that command center. What do you need to see? I mean, I know you got security cameras on different campuses, mm-hmm. but the question is, can you see them all from here?
Yes.
And if they're all IoT type scenarios, then that's great. But so what if that fails? How do you deal with that? You know, maybe drones, it might be other things to help you, but just things you got to think about.
And we'd also want to, if we could, push those camera pictures out to local PD.
Absolutely.
I'm there. They're dispatching.
Yeah. Well, see, the other thing is, because I'm doing a project with a couple of the fusion centers right now, so Dallas and then Collin County. So, and that's the thing. They'll want to know that because then that will connect to other agencies, you know, at the federal level and so forth. And so they'll go to some of the fusion centers to get information. So that's another piece. How does that connect to what they do? And does it overwhelm them? You know, is it a new piece that adds to their, you know, pot of information? So,
as an aside regarding that press conference yesterday with the doctor, we were not invited. However, we called today.
And they asked to say, don't forget us.
Well, what happened was, I called public health. They said, no, it was the mayor's office.
Yeah, it was the mayor's office. That's right.
The mayor's office. They said, we're now on the list.
Yeah. But
they have no plans to do another one at this point.
Well, here's what I would recommend. Ask Dr. Wong to come here, because he will. And Dr. Wong is pretty flexible. I just did a thing with him in Garland for Commissioner Cox's district over there a couple weeks ago. And so, you know, you get a lot of people that come, but you can do something specific, and then he can connect you to the other counties, because he's connected to all the other public health officials that need that kind of support. So,
thanks, John.
No problem. Once again, we're just going through a checklist that each campus should do. I'll go each line. Each campus should do this checklist. Our district toy radios are Home Depot specials. They have limited range, but they will work on the campus. To get a better radio would be somewhat costly. The Motorola's academy would be a little costly measure. We also have upside down pictures of utility cutoff points that are in each plan, so you know where to cut off the utilities.
Yeah, so when we do the walkthroughs with Mr. Shelton, we walk with every single administrator to all the emergency shutoffs. And campus administrators are supposed to know where every emergency setup is.
What's the emergency backup power plan? Is that part of that?
We don't have any backup emergency power at the campuses. And Valerie's the principal of the high school, and there's two administrators, other administrators that you have?
Yes, sir.
One of them is assigned as the facilities person, and that's usually who you walk with. Is whoever the AP is.
We invite everyone just in case.
Good.
But security guards know where every shut off is, facility managers.
That's one
coaches,
thing good.
Coaches walk with us sometimes.
I mean, you guys are so far ahead of most places what you already do and what you already have in place. And so going around and doing that, each campus has done that every year, and it's been really good because, I mean, you're running a multi-million dollar facility. Do you know how to turn off the gas? You know, do you even know where it is? Well, yeah, I know where it is. You know, now everyone says, okay, I am managing a facility. I need to know how it operates, and that's a good thing.
And as an aside, too, I'm sorry, go ahead.
But no, I was just going to say, I appreciate you saying that. It's since he trained me well in Dallas ISD, since the Marine Corps trained me pretty good, I couldn't imagine us starting a charter and not having some of these same procedures in place. And that's why we've done it. There are a lot of charters out there right now that are panicking because the law is requiring them to do these things, and they haven't done any of it. John?
I'm just going to tell you that one of my plans, too, is to make certain that every local PD has a schematic of our campuses, which would include our cutoff points for utilities in case our people aren't there, the SWAT guys or anybody else can actually get in there and cut those things down. Shut off communication, shut off power and utilities, water, whatever it needs.
We did that 2 years ago. It would be very good to make sure they still
have it. Yeah, actually, they still have it.
And that includes like the fire department, so with their hazmat teams and whatnot.
This year, just fire escape routes, evacuation routes, severe weather, shelter points.
You know, one of my trainings that I got, somebody made a comment and said, you know, when we talked about sharing our plans with people and putting them online, is that we want to make sure that we never put our floor plans online. And I thought, well, yeah, I mean, parents need to know how the building up. Well, he said, you know, you don't need a guy in a cave in Afghanistan figuring out how he's going to blow it up because it's all right there for you. You know, we don't want to make too much of our plan available to too many people. We want to kind of keep it, you know, where we can share things that we're doing to keep our kids safe. We don't have to show them everything that we do. No question. Do we have AEDs on all our campuses?
These masks include AEDs and also the, are they including the blood control?
No, the blood kits aren't on.
Yeah, the blood kits will be added to that schematic to know the blood
control. Can you explain what AEDs are?
So,
automatic portable defibrillators.
Yeah, defibrillators. So every nurse and every coach has an AED. And then every campus has 8 bleeding control kits as required by Senate Bill 11. Then they're stationed by the AEDs. And then every facility manager, security guard, nurse, several other, all the coaches are trained. And then we're starting, when we get back from spring break, we're going to start offering it to all 7th graders and up, because we're required to offer that training. And then all staff members can go to that training as well.
It's so a very, very short. It's like it's maybe half an hour.
Yes, sir.
Just a quick comment on the topic of floor plans. You know, I would encourage each school to reach out to the local police department to see if they have a program for floor plans in Garland. We have our in-house computer system on a laptop that I maintain. So I reached out last year and got the floor plans for the high school and lower school. That way when officers are responding there, they can pull it up, it populates the floor plan, and we kind of have a plan of action of what part of the building we need to reach or
Travis, you something have that like too. That. So.
We do, and I can tell you to what he's saying too with law enforcement. If you really want to kind of bridge that gap, reach out to them and offer their tactical teams the ability to go train at your school.
So they we've done
eat that up and do it.
We've done that.
And just have somebody there.
The only one that said they didn't want to do it.
Really?
Because they said they have their own multi-million-dollar facility and they don't want to tear up ours.
Yeah, and you can just do different things. We use all the schools for that reason to familiarize ourselves. But it's what he says. Ours does the same thing. It'll pull up the map and tell.
And there's been some thought too to numbering doors on exteriors of doors to help the SWAT guys like door one. I mean, SWAT guys have their way of numbering doors anyhow, but and even numbering outside of classrooms too. Like where's classroom 101? They know from the outside what 101 is or 201, whatever it is. That could be done too.
I think what's good too when your tactical teams come in is they will also take the time a lot of times to kind of meet with the administrator and say what to expect. An example I can give, College Station ISD has their own plan. Well, then when the team came in and we talked about how we're going to execute our plan if the, you know, bad guys in there, well, those two plans didn't jive at all. You know, because the teachers are going to run, you know, lock the doors and nobody's going to come in. Well, who's there to give us keys to get in to do anything, you know? Our original thought, talking about plans to action, was we're going to go in and we're going to bang our way into a room. Well, we really quick realized, probably like you guys, we're either going to have a wheelbarrow full of breaching rounds because we're going to run out really quick, or we're going to have 55 replacements to come in and breach every single door because they're all locked. So we had to have an administrator meet us with a key so we can get into the rooms and we can do the things. As well as, you probably tell all of your teachers and staff, don't open that door for anybody, right? Unless they have whatever the code word is. Well, bad guy standing there yelling police is no different than me yelling police at the door, too. They're not going to open the door. So making sure those things, and we actually learned that through a simple, hey, can we use your school? Sure. And then a discussion, and we realized we had a really big problem.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good plan for the board, because as we're building new schools, maybe we need to rethink the locking system so that you don't have to do a whole lot of breaching. You know, you can do selective locking and, you know, electronically and that sort of thing. That may be something.
There's a school in Detroit that's just built, that's online now, that they created curved hallways and actual wings. Mm-hmm. That's good and bad. It's protection for students, but it's bad for a SWAT guy once you get shot in that hallway. There's no line of sight for a shot. Good man.
You know, as I've walked through all the schools and as I look at them and we start looking at the active shooter plan and so on, I mean, really the schools are built well too. People can get behind the locked door pretty quick. I mean, there's a lot of good places to go. The one problem I've seen, and it seems to be pretty consistent, and that's only if you were in the lunchroom and the bad guy was in the building and was coming that way. I mean, there's not really, you can secure that room a little bit, but where do you go? I mean, that's the one we've always tried to look at. Can we can we get to the gym and to the back of the weight room, or can we get somewhere? But that's the only place in the building I've seen that there's a flaw of, you know, where do we move that big group of kids at lunch or where? Mm-hmm.
That was Columbine.
That's exactly right.
So that's pretty much the plan.
Yeah.
And there's an example of the drill.
Yeah, it's filling your love. Filling the drill off for fire and lockdown and the evacuation drills.
Good. One of the things that I think is important about the plan is whoever is underneath you really needs to know what your job is. If, for instance, if she's not available, you've stepped off campus or for whatever, something happens, but you're the only one that knows how to execute whatever that is that you're doing, you've got to have that line of succession in there. And it may be in there.
It is. That's what we need as a team.
We try to go three deep on everything. Gotcha. They have the administration.
But is it current or not? That's the question.
Correct.
That one is not.
Basically, whoever number two steps up, they need to be able to make decisions without getting permission. They just need to be able to immediately decide, you know. And seriously, the whole plan for the campus plan, really in a nutshell, is how do we effectively, efficiently protect our students and staff as quick as we can and last till the cavalry arrives. That's really what we're trying to do. I mean, it's not, and then we can take it further once we're there, but we want to, cavalry's coming, you know, we just need to make sure we are doing the best we can with what we got to work with that facility. And again, it comes down to drill and practice. And what you know and how it becomes second nature. We're so good at fire. I mean, we're great at fire. Everybody knows fire drill goes off. We all know what to do. But lockdown, we're not that good. You know, we don't practice it enough. And it's something. And again, you know, a school is only as effective as the administration. You know, administration is the leadership of that school. And if they're really on top of it, doing it, and I've seen a lot of it, and then I've seen a lot of it that's not. So it just depends how good you are. And to do a lockdown drill, lock down now. Everybody lock down. Go in. We're going to check some doors. Okay, you know, we're going to end the lockdown and so on. 15 minutes, maybe not that long. I mean, things can be done in an effective, quick. It doesn't take a long time to do that, but we need to get, you know, one thing we can count on, there's going to be another school shooting. Yeah, there's going to be another problem.
Well, what we do when we do the lockdown, we always brief before what's the plan, then we go out and execute, and then come back and talk about the issues. And if there's some teachers with, you know, you're hearing noise or the windows aren't covered, we go back and we have those discussions within those groups to let them know this is what we saw and this is a possibility.
Right. Debriefing.
Yeah.
And
you know, that, and listening to your folks. You know, you listen to your people. I mean, what didn't go right? What went wrong? You know, I mean, mm-hmm. And sometimes it doesn't make any sense, but, you know, people's fears are real.
Yeah.
You know? I guess a great point, because one of the things I think from a command center perspective is really the lessons learned, and then the compilation of all the lessons learned across the district. You know, and that, those are things I'm sure, Chief, you guys will get involved in. But the other thing I was going to ask from the counselor's perspective, because this issue came up in a couple other places, is about the kids with active shooter drills, about how they respond. So, you know, there's been some discussions about psychological damage and that sort of thing. I don't know if your counselors have been talking about that or anybody has been thinking about it from that perspective. You know, because there's, you know, maybe for adults it may not be as much anxiety as for the kids because it's more unknown. But, you know, like we always like to say, you know, you can have the best plan until the first round goes downrange and then the plan goes out the door and then you're adjusting, right? And so the question is, you know, because when adrenaline and chaos is going and uncertainty and confusion, people don't necessarily act rational, and practice does help you get there, but when it becomes live, people behave a little bit differently. So I'm just wondering, from the, you know, from the counselor perspective, is that something you guys talk among the counselors about?
We haven't talked about it a lot, but I do think it's important, especially for the plan drills, that the students have that opportunity to talk with their teacher, or I mean, it could be a counselor. We haven't done any actual counseling lessons on that, but I think it's a good idea because I think the kids need to be prepared.
I think actually Senate Bill 11 now addresses we have to go through the recovery phase after an incident.
After an incident, a drill. And I think it's a good idea to prepare them for that. I mean, I know sometimes if we have a surprise drill that they don't know about, but I think it's good to prepare, especially the young ones. I think middle school, high school, obviously, they deal with it a little bit better, but the young ones, I definitely see that being a concern.
Well, I'm always worried about Generation Z is, you know, like us baby boomers, we keep thinking they're not tough enough. So, you know, when a big burly policeman comes along, he yells out and says, hey, get over here, put your hands up, and like, they'll start crying, and then before you know it, everybody goes, I'm traumatized, and then you have counseling. And
sure, that's the, that's the elementary teachers. Oh.
but to Frank's point, if we have to do it due to an incident, we need to know how we're going to do it. So there needs to be some training, some prep beforehand.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, that question kind of gets into the threat assessment piece.
Right. So that's the other big thing on the agenda tonight, was talking a little bit about threat assessment. You know, if there's a threat that comes, a potential threat, how do we handle that in regards to students?
And I'm going to toss it to y'all about you to talk about the current plan.
Current threat assessment or current?
Hurting themselves, mm-hmm. threat assessment yeah. you're talking
oh, okay.
about.
Okay, suicide risk assessment. So we do have a plan already in place as far as what we do if a student is reported to either be self-harming, which normally that would be cutting, or if they have expressed suicide ideation of any type. So, and if it is self-harm, we make sure that the student is not suicidal. I mean, that's the first thing. And then we have then steps as far as putting a safety plan in place with the student. And then for a suicide risk assessment, I brought just some samples if anyone wants to look at them of what we currently have in place. And I'll just pass those around. We do need to do some updates on the plan based on Senate Bill 11. But the three things that the counselors are trying to do when they do a risk assessment is answer three questions. One, has the student expressed they want to kill themselves? Two, do they have a plan? Three, do they have access to the means to carry it out? So those are the three things. But we have a series of documents that we go through. One is for elementary, because unfortunately we have students as young as kindergarten expressing the desire to die. So we have questions that we use with elementary, and then we have questions for middle school and high school.
And sorry, I have a kindergarten.
Oh, I know, it's shocking, yeah. But and it's very unfortunate. So we do quite a bit of training with the counselors on suicide intervention, and then doing risk assessments and then reporting. One thing, if a student has cut or if they've expressed the desire to die, parents are called, period. You know, that's just a non-negotiable, because lots of times the students will express very quickly, well, I didn't mean it. And then that's when the counselor will go through the assessment with them. But parents are called regardless, and that's just a non-negotiable there. And the same with the cutting. We always give the parent resources to take the student to. So we have steps that we go through. I mean, obviously the best thing is the parent to come to school, to meet with the counselor, and then discuss a plan. We've had situations, of course, if a student is currently suicidal and, you know, or we know they've taken pills, it's a 911 call. So that's, you know, just the obvious. We've had a few situations where a student is suicidal, parents refuse to come, and then it's possibly a call to the police to then transport. But if that happens, the counselor is always supposed to talk to the principal, AP, and that decision is made together. We really don't want a counselor making that type decision on their own.
And I know that we've had kids who have expressed that they want to use a weapon, mm-hmm. and we have contacted the local police to be able to do a health and safety check,
right.
so that they're going to the parents to ask if there's weapons in the home. All of our Chromebooks, all of our connectivity of any of our devices go through our data center, and at the data center, a software, their Lightspeed, is wired to pick up anything, any words
any
about bomb, threat, or kill that
so
we're
sad.
Able as well to then identify that and then communicate that with the local police.
Correct. And then lots of times, especially if it's weekends or holidays, especially, and it seems like things always come through.
For sure.
Friday afternoon,
spring break, Thanksgiving,
the
or whatever.
The principals receive an email, and mm-hmm. then we have to act on that email.
Immediately, yeah. So it's not something you can wait until school's back in session.
And we've done it quite often mm-hmm. To where we actually have gone to homes because no one was there. And we had to wait. I know there was one incident where I had to wait outside the house for the parents to come home because she had gone to the store, but the brother was there. And so we do go over and beyond with that.
Right now,
I've had to call the police mm-hmm. from my house because the child was in the Keller area threatening suicide mm-hmm. through the Chromebook.
Right.
We had
a
9 o'clock at night.
It was very late.
Yeah. I know over Thanksgiving break, we had a situation with a Houston student, and Mr. Brown was out of state. I was out of state, but still we had our messages, and he tried to reach the family. We couldn't reach the family, and then finally, we called the police. Police went and did just a welfare check on the family. Because obviously our goal, even in that situation, is to talk to the parents, but when you can't reach anyone and you've got a message that, you know, that child is ready to take their life, I mean, that's all we can do, so.
In harm to themselves, what are y'all seeing in both your police departments? Are y'all seeing a spike in having to do health and safety checks on kids and families? And
I think our spike is the threat to harm the school. You know, the new legislation that passed now that if they even threaten to exhibit a firearm on school property, which extends to school buses, our department, mandatory, has to come out to go do a home check, see if they have weapons, if they have access to weapons. If we determine that they actually did make that threat on social media or something, then we're actually arresting them.
Yep.
And so that these kids are learning pretty quick and joking about it on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Ends up with the police at your door in about an hour or two.
And we keep trying to communicate that to the students through the leadership classes. This is not a joke. Don't say anything about this. You cannot just say you're going to blow the school up or you're going to bring a gun, or you can't do that. But yet, that happens. And in College Station, we had one young lad mm-hmm. who made a comment, and he was arrested and taken away in handcuffs.
And for whatever reason, I've seen more often than not is the police get that call from the administrator, not necessarily ILT, but including, you know, the Garland School District, at the end of the day. You know, it's kind of an afterthought, like 5 o'clock before we go home, oh, we need to make sure the police department knows about it.
Yeah.
Well, that's where we are starting our investigation, you know, so that may require getting the detectives to come back from home, and you know, it's an all-night thing if we're arresting a 13-year-old.
That's because they don't want to be on the 6 o'clock news.
Yeah, so they can call us sooner in the day.
We started at 2:30 a.m. in Grand Prairie on time.
Yeah.
And
I refer to it as a stopwatch. The second they get that threat, the stopwatch starts, and they need to be communicating with everybody.
Well, the other thing is that, because we talked about this, and I don't know if they've come over yet, so the FBI will respond to any of the social media threats, so especially if it's mass shooting, and they'll send their teams too, so they'll usually coordinate with the local police department. But as a way of example, we had a kid up in Collin County who was the 13-year-old, you know, dared by the other 13-year-olds. Well, I bet she wouldn't post this. And it became a problem. So they showed up at the door. okay, bud, what's going on? And, of course, you know, parents got a problem now. And, you know, because it's a communicated threat on a public network. So, and that's, you know, the challenge you got, I think, with Generation Z kids is everybody's playing social media. And whether they really mean it or not, you know, you can't take the chance because there's too many incidents.
I think what ties into this as well is kind of the school's response and going back to the College Station one. And I actually called, I was working that day, and I called Frank. I was like, man, I'm headed to y'all's school. This is what's going on. I was actually on-call supervisor, so I was going in two roles.
Yeah.
But kind of working through that, the school did a really good job because it was kind of an off-the-cuff comment made. One kid kind of told mom called. But what wasn't there was this mass media blitz. The problem is, and I'm sure it's no different than any other, probably Garland's the same way, the media, they just troll these things. And so they got a hold of it, and then they pushed it out there. So on the back end, the school got, you know, tapped with media calling saying what's going on. So that is a message that I would definitely say, and kind of a plan for how are you going to handle that, because it was completely handled within the school. We did the home visit. The kid didn't even have anything that looked like a weapon. I mean, he had no access to nothing. It was a dumb comment. But by the time that happened, well, what you ended up with was parents who work hard in the community and do everything now are blasted all over for having a kid that's fixing to shoot up, you know, 15 schools. When it just wasn't the case. So that is really what we're seeing. But the secondary aspect of that is kind of the aftermath of it. And that's where I think a lot of times we don't plan for is we've handled the incident. Now we've got all this other stuff coming. Because then what happened was parents started calling the school saying, is he ever coming back? And, you know, what is y'all's plan? Things like that. So,
yeah, good point.
Yeah, I think just kind of following up on your comments about suicide prevention and just mental health in general. The as I was looking through your documents here, another agency you may want to add there is Mental Health America. Mm-hmm. And Mental Health America does a lot of counseling, and some of it, especially if people can't afford the health care side. Because the other part of what's going on with mental health in Texas, as you probably know, we're like 48th or 49th and pretty much trolling at the bottom. And, you know, I always used to say when I was on the crime commission, I'd tell my chiefs, I said, you know, your policemen have three options. The first option is control it and you send them to a mental health facility if one's available. The second thing is you control them, you take them to the jail. And so, you know, in Dallas County and Harris County, we put 100 extra mental health beds in because if you try to get them to Terrell, which is kind of on the edge of looking like Auschwitz these days, it's an 8-month movement. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if somebody was that severe. And the other part is insurance companies. So if you want treatment for your kids, most of them are short-term, about 2 weeks, and that's the extent of the coverage that most insurance give. So then there's the question, what's the backup plan if you have a kid that has that? And then even from the district perspective, a policy about, well, how do I handle this kid? Only had 2 weeks of treatment, probably needs more, but are we bringing him back to school because that's a requirement to bring him back to school, or is he in an alternative setting? You know, so I think some of those decisions may end up coming up.
And that's very difficult for us, obviously, and we do face that all the time. Mental Health of America, we do work with them, as well as MHMR. I just don't think I have them on that list, but the problem that we run into with asking parents to take their students for the assessment outside of school. In the past, we've required it, but then we were told we were denying them FAPE. I mean, we require it or you can't come back to school. So then we're denying them FAPE. So then now we strongly recommend it. And then on our forms, we have, you know, you may, if you don't, you may be reported to CPS. So. And that's, and we unfortunately have to do that. I like being able to require them to take them because I feel like the safety of a child is more important than vape, but with the attorney, I mean, yeah.
I'm agreeing with
I know.
You. That wasn't a snort.
Yeah,
but, disagreeing. It's just.
But it's just kind
it's
of
lawyers.
One of those challenges.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I would love it if we could do that. If we could require it, but yeah. Sometimes they go and yes, they're in there 5 days, mm-hmm. maybe 10 days,
right.
And they're back, and they still.
Right.
Of course, have the same issues. So.
Some of this is federal and some of it is state, but the more that we can communicate with the state, whatever they could require, because as a school, we can't, I mean, there's very little that we can require of the
right.
parents once they're off campus.
Well, the other question is whether the health industry will be supportive. I mean, right now it's not as supportive as you would think. I mean, everybody talks the game about mental health, but it's really. Not as strong as it needs to be. And so, I mean, when you're thinking about this continuity of care, you know, the question is, if it stops at 2 weeks, you know, that's a problem. And
yeah.
So what does a parent do? So if they have no funds or insurance to cover it, because none of it's going to be cheap.
Right.
And that's the other challenge. So some of them will resist because of cost. And then, you know, so then we end up punishing them because, well, they don't have any money, so we're going to punish you some more, you know. And so it's kind of a vicious cycle.
It is a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
But our counselors, I mean, they do, we provide as much as we can places with sliding scales, MHMR. We can get yes waivers for students if they qualify, of course. So we really work trying to provide those resources. But bottom line, you know, sometimes parents
up.
Just don't have the funds to take them, to get them in a facility. They can always get them somewhere for an assessment. But then if it's a facility, that's challenging.
And that's from a record perspective, because, you know, the other side of that is, once you get into mental health programs, see, there's the downstream effect. You know, do they get in school? Or are they employable? I mean, all these discussions are going on, you know, with what maybe happens
sure.
in their early childhood. So I don't know if that's an issue that you've seen yet, but, you know, in some quarters, I mean, there's a lot of discussions going on in the corporate world about, you know, who people are hiring.
Right.
And if they've had these issues, they may not be hireable.
You're absolutely right.
And that's why some parents deny that they don't want to do that, because they don't want their kid labeled
exactly.
as they're having mental issues.
Exactly.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mary. I think what I'll do, I'm going to recap a couple of kind of next item actions, action items that I'm going to take after this. And then what we'll do is we're going to go around the room, and I'm going to give everybody the opportunity to give them the floor real quick for any questions or anything else that you'd like to comment on. Now, this is not necessarily a list of things that you need to do, but in some cases it's just a follow-up check to make sure that we've got it in place. First of all, make plans available for committee members. Review. We're going to make sure we're reviewing plans with the principal at the beginning of the year before the kids get there. Ensure ongoing relationship with evacuation sites. Continue to work on our district operations plan and our district command center. Follow up with Dr. Wong, potentially for help with CDC and so forth. Making sure that the emergency cutoff points are on the map. Making sure that the LA, all the local police departments have floor plans. Media training at all levels. I've got counsel recovery after drills and after incident. Immediate communication to PD after an incident. Along with just a general communication plan after an incident. And then I put down just review mental health for students with issues out of school for those that make sure that we are providing proper care for students who can't afford it. So, very good. Ms. Lane, anything else?
Did I hear recovery plans or recovery training for students?
Yeah.
Yes.
I hear that. Okay. All right. Oh, nothing.
Good.
I'm good.
You almost want to get out of here.
Everything, Ms. Shelton? Officer Capers?
No. Good.
Angela? Officer Ross?
I have a couple of takeaways, but I'll talk to you.
Sure.
Well, I need to make sure that the principals all have their
their security plans updated. So we need to figure out how to get that done very quickly, and then also probably invite you to our next principal's meeting and have you go over some of that with them. So we meet on a monthly basis, and we can have you there with them next month.
And finally, the members of our board, if you have anything, or the superintendent.
Okay.
So, a question. So, at each school, is there some one person who's in charge of the plan?
There's an assistant principal assigned.
Okay. So, is there a protocol in place for? Because I noticed names are on there in quite a few different places, and so is there some kind of protocol in place for them to check that periodically to make sure the names are current?
We update it at the beginning of every year, but we don't tell them, hey, check your plan and make sure the names are updated.
It's a living document, so it should always, have new blood and new phone numbers.
As long as someone's interacting with it.
Right.
Yeah. And John is a new position, a new hire, and so this is going to add another level of scrutiny to all the other hats that he did have. To be able to do exactly what you're asking, because it's got to be updated.
Yep.
And we may need to include HR in this, so that as part of someone being terminated or someone leaving, that there's an automatic communication to the security side of it. Just in the normal process.
I'm going to bring up a whole other thing. Do they have camera access? Do we need to terminate that?
Yeah.
Also, if we would add the review of the plan with our monthly fire drill or whatever you're requiring, if it's on that checklist that we've done that, that is just a reminder for us to make sure that it's done.
Aaron, I did have one other thought. Now that we have a young parent right here. I was going to say, does the campus need to have like a little parent committee? I don't know if you tie that through your PTA type organization, or just so that you have that parent input, just so they're up to speed. Maybe they can communicate with other parents, and I don't know if that's necessary or
did we do. What was the requirement for at the campus level, campus security team? That's the wrong term, but was
no. The only requirement is we have a safe and supportive schools threat assessment team on the campuses, but every campus already has a committee, but it's made up of administrators and teachers and whoever wants to be on the committee, but there's staff members. There's no parent involved in that.
But how could we include making sure that we're communicating what we're doing to the parents so the parents are even aware? I mean, before today, did you have any idea of the background that we're already doing?
Mm-hmm. So I think Mr. Shelton has expressed to the principals is maybe you select one or two parents you can trust with our plans, and you let them know what we're doing, and then they can express that to the...
Well, what we do monthly anyway... There is a handbook, but what we do every month, and your principal, I'm pretty sure, does it too, is that we have some form of a parent meeting, and mine is lattes with Lane, and so maybe coffee with the principal, but we should include those conversations about what we're doing for security, not necessarily our plans, because they don't need to know that, but they do need to know everything that we're doing to keep their kids safe. So,
it conflicts with a meeting that I
But they should put out the notes anyway. So if your principal isn't putting out the notes, you want to check with him or her.
I would argue do it generically, not specifically. I don't want that plan getting out to somebody that shouldn't have that plan.
Yeah.
You want to say, but you're working on it, and we can say generically we have kind of generic response to an issue is fine. But I want to put out the exact language. That's bad, I think.
No, just we have armed security that we meet regularly to go over our plans,
that's
and we have
that's fine.
Just,
right.
General.
All right. Thank you very much for this. I do want to thank the people that traveled here to be a part of this. Very, very important. Every meeting, we're going to come up with different ways that we're going to make our school safer.
So, Aaron, when do you think the other meetings are? So, there's three meetings required a year, right?
Yeah, I'm going to target May. I don't necessarily want to throw out dates and try to figure that out tonight. But I want to target during the next meeting tonight.
See, I'm thinking, you said a summer meeting, so, if we're in the middle of China or Middle East, you know, I don't want you to call me and say, what happened to you?
We'll look to get that scheduled as soon as possible in May, and then we're going to target again in August.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you all very, very much.
Make sure you all sign in so I can keep it with the group.
Is this ours?
See you, sir.
Hey, take care,
Greg. The one button.